Hello everyone, and welcome again to Live Chat with Viv and Bill. We have such an exciting lineup of guests for you this evening. I just cannot wait to hear them. And thank you all who listened to our first podcast that we had last week. And please continue to share the podcast so that you have we have as many persons as possible listening in to our broadcast. So for our lineup this evening, we have nurses from New York and here from Delaware. And I am going to have them each just introduce themselves and where they work and how long they have been in nursing. And then we'll just ask them some questions. So I will start with Cheryl.
Sure. Hi, good evening. So my name is Cheryl Baker. I'm a nurse practitioner in Bronx, New York. I originally started as a registered nurse and then went back to my NP. I currently work in medical oncology. However, during the COVID crisis, I was in SICU and I've been working in oncology for over 20 years, outpatient. And before that, I was on a step-down unit, a cardiac step-down unit that I worked for 10 years. That's about it.
All right. Wow. Sounds like a lot of experience. Wow. And you've been a nurse much longer than some of our listening audience.
Oh, yes.
All right. So, Faith, you want to tell us a little bit, to tell us your name, where you work, and how long have you been in nursing?
Okay. My name is Faith Gashaga Mwangi, and I've been a nurse for just a little over 4 years now. I know I went back to school after my kids were a little grown, and I decided to go do my nursing because that was a dream I always had to do. So I went back to Dell Tech and I got my registered nursing associate's degree. And now I'm working at Parkview Nursing Home. And I work, I first started as at the rehab unit. And then now I'm in the long-term care.
All right. That sounds exciting. Okay. I'm not going to pronounce your last name. It's too much of a mouthful for me, so I'm just going to call you Faith. Is that okay?
Okay, that's fine.
All right. And our third nurse that we have with us is Genevieve. Genevieve, why don't you tell us a little bit about you, where you work, and how long you've been a nurse?
Hi, so I'm Genevieve Campbell. Had managerial training as an RN in Jamaica of the West Indies, where I worked in critical care, did midwifery, came to this country in 1990, did the program in family nurse practitioner, and now I work with the Montefiore Medical Group, which is affiliated to Montefiore Medical Center, where I have been an NP for the past...
How many total years as a nurse?
41.
Oh, my. Wow, you've been a nurse longer than I was born.
Not really.
Come on, Velma.
Just kidding. So, before we get into the meat of the matter, what made you guys decide to become nurses? Because I'm also a nurse, I will remind our audience. However, when I was very young, I so knew I was going to be a teacher. I would go around and I would beat every wood, every doorpost, everything in the house. I would teach those trees and those wooden boards. And if they couldn't give me the right answer, duh, then I would beat them again because that's what I was used to. And I just thought that I was going to be
a teacher. I did the same thing, a matter of fact, Vilma.
You did the same thing?
I did the same thing.
I tell you, if anybody told me I was going to be a nurse, I would say, oh, no. Because every person around me that did something, you know, good, they were teachers. So I grew up with teachers. So, and here I am, 41 years after, still in the profession and loving it. So what made you decide to be a nurse? Geneve, and don't tell me it's the salary because I'm not going to believe you.
Okay, so I entered nursing because I did not know what I wanted to do. And my best friend was absolutely sure she had always wanted to do nursing. And the day she went into Kingston, we're both from the country, she went into Kingston to sign up at the most popular nursing school, University of the West Indies School of Nursing. Unknown to my parents, that's the first time I did something unknown to my parents, I went into Kingston, which was a brave thing to do because Kingston was a big, bad place they didn't want to venture to, and I didn't know Kingston. Anyway, I went with her, and wherever she wrote her name down, I wrote my name down. And both of us were accepted into nursing at the same time. And hence, I have grown to love nursing. And it probably was God-led because I don't know, I don't see what else I'd probably be as happy doing as I do now.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The nurses do disobey parents, right? Oh boy! Did you tell your kids? Did you tell your children that?
I don't think I did.
Okay, we'll keep it a secret until they listen to the podcast. Okay. What about you? What about you, Cheryl?
So I decided to be a nurse, become a nurse, somewhere in the first part of high school, and I did that because. So my mom is a nurse. And I admire her so much. I remember when I was younger, much younger, however, I did say I wanted to be a stewardess, but that went away along the way. When we reached into high school and deciding what we really wanted to do, I was like, I want to be like my mom. So I was in high school and they had a program for nursing and they had a candy striper where you go and you volunteer at the hospital to see if that's what you really want to do. And so I did candy stripe volunteering for 2 semesters. And then I started doing the nursing program in high school. And when I graduated, I went to college to get my BS degree in nursing. But I did it because I wanted to be like my mom. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's admirable. You know, Vivian, any of your kids wanted to be like you?
Yes, as a matter of fact, my son thinks that I get into people's head, so he wants to be like me. Well, he wants to be a psychologist.
Oh, okay. My daughter ran as far as she could from nursing.
And
that's admirable.
I was saying too also that my mom, so it kind of flipped. So years ago when I wanted to be like her and went to school and did a nursing, went back to school and did nurse practitioner. And when I graduated nurse practitioner in 95, in about 4 years later, my mom went back to school and became a nurse practitioner.
Oh, boy.
Like, okay, we're switching roles here. Yeah.
That's nice. That's nice. Okay, Faith, what about you?
Yeah, I grew up treating wounds at home. Like, I would just make believe wounds on my siblings and just treat them, and I would do everything. I just loved the profession. I just loved nursing. And that was something that was spoken to me by everyone. What I really wanted to be was a doctor. But when I grew up after high school, the system at home was a little dictative. I wanted to go to a medical training college to do either nursing or medicine degree, a medical degree, but the system would dictate where you belong, where you need to go, not where you want to be. So I found myself in a teaching university, in a university that trained teachers, and I ended up being a teacher. It's funny that you say you wanted to be a teacher when you were growing up. Vilma, yeah, because I ended up becoming a teacher. I was a high school teacher for 4 years, and that was something that in my wildest dream you'd never have told me that I could have been a teacher, but I became a teacher. I enjoyed the experience, but I still felt like something was missing. So when I came to the United States, I said I will have to pursue my dream. it doesn't matter when or where, but I will have to pursue mm-hmm. my dream of becoming, of going into the medical profession. So mm-hmm. when my kids were grown, one of my eldest daughter asked me, "Mom, you always told me that you wanted to be a doctor when you were growing up. So why are you not a doctor?" And that just kept me like thinking. And I tell you, the very next day, I went to Deltek and I applied for my education. I applied to start just prerequisites for nursing. I told her, "Baby, I think I'm a little too old to become a doctor, and it might require so much of my time away from you. So I'm going to be something close to a doctor. I'm going to be a nurse practitioner." And I started my associate degree in nursing, and I completed that. And I've been aspiring. I started my bachelor's education just recently. So I'm yet to attain that. And I'm okay. not stopping until I become a nurse practitioner. And I love what I do. I know this is what I was born to do. And for me, nursing is really a calling. It's something that I really wanted to do from mm-hmm. A long while ago. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just going to jump in and say one thing, that you are never too old, girl. You can do what you want when you want it. And if you That's listen right. to our show last week, Bibilin was talking about, you know, her counselor who was trying to tell her she wasn't college material. And she defied that. She didn't allow her to speak into her life. And That's she right. went ahead and you know, and went to university and got her master's and doing well. So you're not too old. Don't speak that into yourself.
Okay.
When I got my PhD, I was pretty over the hills, but on top of the hill. I was on top of the hill looking down. Yeah. So don't say that. Don't say that.
Okay. I will. I take that back.
Yes. Wonderful. So, thank you guys for sharing that information. So now we know. So let's before I pass forward to today, I just want to explain to our audience, when you notice some say they are nurse practitioners. So a nurse practitioner is an advanced practice nurse. So after you have obtained your initial nursing degree, you go on to do advanced nursing, advanced practice. So any person who mentioned as a nurse practitioner, they have had advanced training in nursing. And Faith, you don't have to go to be a doctor. You can be a doctor nurse. I'm a doctor nurse. So if you have a PhD, you'll be a doctor as well, a doctor nurse. So that's fine. Okay. Continue nursing. It's mm-hmm. rewarding.
Okay.
All right. And for those of you in our mm-hmm. audience out there, if you want to hear more information about this and how you transition from one area to the next, hit us up. Hit us up on Facebook, or you can email us, or you can check out our webpage. Email us, okay, and ask us questions, and we will tell you what you need to do. All right, so let's fast forward. Nurses have been really admired more so over the last few months because of more and more people seeing the great job. Not that they weren't great all along, but they are recognizing the awesome job that they're doing, especially in this time where we have COVID-19. And they are among those that they refer to as frontliners. I want you to share with us and the audience about your experience as a nurse and working with COVID patients. And I know we look at you as heroes and well-deserved and doing well, but in the back of your mind, did you always feel like a hero? Tell us about it. Who wants to go first? Cheryl.
Okay, so no, I didn't look at it as a hero. So actually, I thought when I was, so let me back up. So I used to work as an outpatient oncology nurse practitioner. And somewhere in the second week of March, when the influx came into the hospital with the COVID patient, they decided that they needed more nurses. So as the outpatient setting starting to close down, they decided that they're going to deploy the nurses into the hospital to help cover the shortage of nurses. So the nurses that were already present in the hospital were either coming down with COVID themselves and had to be released from duty, or they were making extra units in the hospital to accommodate the influx of the COVID-19 patients and needed more nurses to participate in taking care of these patients. And I actually, when they told me that I was going to be deployed, initially I was like, what? I've been out of the bedside nursing for over 20 years. How am I going to go in there and figure out all these things that need to be done? These patients are very critical. There are a lot of patients. There's no time for retraining. And in the back of my mind, I was saying, can I really do it? And I remember talking to one of my girlfriend that says, like, it's like just going on a bicycle. You know how to learn. You learn to ride a bicycle. Once you go back on, you just go back in automatic. You just go right ahead and do it. Mm-hmm. And so I was a little bit fearful, I must say. As I said, it was 20 years on the outpatient setting, never been at the bedside in that time. And so going in initially, the first night, I remember praying. I'm like, God, please help me to do the best I can going back in this scenario. Mm. And I said, and I need help because, like I said, it's 20 years ago. I was so happy and blessed that when I went in and I got the assignment, and they paired me up with a nurse that from the PACU, which she was never in the ICU unit either. They pulled her to also help out. And I remember her saying, okay, this is an assignment. These are our patients. And she said to me out of the blue, I know this had to be God. She said, well, you are not from this area. I am not from this area. And we have these patients to take care of and they're critical. So what we're going to do, we're going to stop and pray right now that at the end of our shift, all these patients are still going to be alive. Wow. And I was like, wow.
Wow.
I'm like, God, place me with the right person because mm-hmm. we know we could not do it on our own. Mm-hmm. And so we were like, when she said that, my heart just lit up. And I was going to say a prayer about the patients and we called them by name and we went ahead and start doing our treatment. And I was like, wow. After that, I was smooth sailing after that. There was nothing stopping me after that. I just went back in. I did what I had to do. Some of the stuff I had to relearn, of course, but it wasn't that. It was hard. It just came easy. And it actually went smoothly first, second, third night. And we just kept on going. And it was, as I said, challenging sometimes with the patients and their status. And another times when we see that it was like a little bit overwhelming, I just say a prayer, whisper a prayer in my mind, like, God, you just have to help me get through this day because otherwise I cannot do it on my own strength. So, yeah.
Cheryl, can you explain to our listeners what PACU is? You said the other nurse came from PACU. What is PACU?
Yeah, so it's actually a holding area after patients come out of, say, surgery.
Surgery, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, it's an intermittent place between there and the unit or wherever they're going.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Good. You know, one thing that I discover, so you weren't totally dependent on yourself to take care of these patients, right?
No, not at all.
You sought help from a higher being, it would seem.
Exactly. I could not do it on my own.
Mm.
Could not. Wow. Absolutely could not do it on my own.
Okay. And, you know, a lot of times I've been listening on the news and I see some of the nurses who also express, you know, some fear. And so I'm glad to see that we are being true to ourselves, that, you know, there is a little fear, a little trepidation when we are put in dangerous situations.
Exactly. Because all we were hearing is the death toll going higher and higher and higher. And even though we knew we had to take care of the patient, that fear in your mind is like, okay, I'm here to do what I have to do, but you're also saying, what if?
Mm-hmm.
What if? Because everybody is scaring away from the fact that this is killing a lot of people. And here we are running into it, like into the line of fire. So you do have the back of your mind, okay, yes, this is your, this is my calling. I am a nurse. I'm supposed to take care of patients. This is what I was born to do. This is what I was called to do. This is not something I'm going to say, well, all of a sudden I'm not going to be a nurse today because my life, it might be in jeopardy, you know? But it's in the back of your mind, like, wow, I'm going in there and we don't know all the ins and outs of this virus and what it actually is happening.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Faith. What about you? Did you work with COVID patients?
Oh, yes. My experience is a little, it was a challenge because in March, before we had our very first COVID case, my director came to me and it was just out of the blue. Like, I did not, it was so unexpected. She came to me and she called me to her office and she told me, Faith, I have an assignment for you. I want you to manage a certain unit. And I'm like, oh no, I'm not a manager. I am not a leader. I gave her all the excuses I could. But she said, no, I see potential in you and I know you can do it. And I told her, well, I cannot really just accept that position just like that. I have to go and think about it. I have to pray about it. I just can't take it blindly. It was something that I never really expected. So when I came home, spoke to my husband, my children, and we prayed. And that night, God revealed to me that he really, this was what he wanted me to do. Mm. And because I had reached a point in my life, even though I'm just a new nurse, like 4 years, I still was tired of doing the medication cut. I just wanted something new, especially after facing some tragedy last year. So this took me out of balance. But when I prayed to God and he showed me, he revealed to me that this is what he wants me to do. I went in the next day and I confidently told the director, yes, I will do it. And she was so happy and the administrative staff was happy that I was going to do it. So, but when I just took over the unit, we had our very first COVID case. And guess where the COVID case was? In my unit. Mm. And before long, we had an outbreak of COVID in my whole unit. Like left and right, patients were getting diagnosed with COVID. They were getting symptoms. And it was really, really, it was a hard time. But God gave me the grace. God puts us in places where he knows that you can do it. And I did. It was a time of my life that I have depended entirely on the Lord. We have worked tirelessly, me and the CNAs, the nurses on the unit. We have really worked to make sure that our patients are comfortable. And if you have worked, or if you know the long-term care residents, the long-term care patients, most of them are comfort care. Most of them are do not hospitalize, do not intubate, you know, do not resuscitate. So it's really been a challenge working with this population. And we've operated our little unit, like our little ICU, like pulling oxygen tanks, applying oxygen, increasing oxygen. And the one thing that really, really came to me, like our patients, they just need comfort. They need love. Like they've been isolated socially from their families. Mm-hmm. They've been isolated from those they love. And here we are, the nurses. So we've been spending more time. I know in other facilities, maybe they limit the exposure to the patients because they don't want to get it and we don't want to spread it somewhere else. But to us, we go in and when you go feed, you spend time with them. You want to reassure them that it's okay. We are the family that they have. We worked with them. We just, you know, embrace them. We just trying to keep them as comfortable as we can, as we possibly can. When most of them cannot really express their level of comfort, so we just but I thank God that just recently we had our recovery celebration. We have so many recoveries on that unit. We have so many patients come from it, and we just praise God. We have seen the hand of God on that unit. Yeah, God has miracles. And those people that we were not expecting to survive it, they actually came through with it. We have more recoveries than death.
Okay, good. Oh, that was such awesome words that you shared with us. And you had those excuses, and Bibilina, she was saying that and talking about the excuses she had. It reminds me of Moses, you know, coming up with why he couldn't lead the children of Israel out of Egypt, as well as Gideon, you know. Excuses.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Genevieve, what about your experience?
So my experience perhaps was less intense than Faith's and Cheryl's, in the sense that I'm in the primary care setting where we're seeing the patient up front to make that determination if they need to be sent to the hospital. At the outset, I think, to a great extent, there's a lot of ignorance. It's like COVID was sort of unfolding. So the signs and the symptoms that you were advised to look for, in many cases, were not the typical presentation that we had. Mm-hmm. So, and that served as a disadvantage because the level of precaution, you know, we were able to wear the protective garments with specific patients who had specific, you know, symptoms, signs and symptoms.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But as it evolved, we realized that a number of the patients that we saw certainly were not, you know, showing some of those symptoms, or those were a few of the symptoms they showed, but they had other symptoms, which later we came to recognize as symptoms that were typical of patients who had COVID-19 infection. Mm-hmm. So there was ignorance, in a way, is bliss. So I think to a certain extent, it was bliss for some of us. But in hindsight, it really was not bliss because, you know, we ended up having quite a few of our staff becoming positive with COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks be to God. He obviously was watching out for us because, unlike, you know, reports from other sites, all our workers survived. You know, some were a little more ill than others. In fact, you know, there was one particular person who had such severe pneumonia, she was out for a pretty long while, but only this week she returned to work. So God be praised. So in terms of the fear, my attitude was, Lord, I go each day with the intention of serving you. So my protection necessarily must come from you. And there is no doubt that that must have happened because I went on vacation the 19th of March, but the 2 weeks prior leading up to that was really intense in terms of the patients who were coming in, and later on some turned out to be positive. You know, also believe that many perhaps who were positive were not diagnosed because there was the difficulty of getting testing. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people were not tested. So, but they just went, they were just sent to self-quarantine until the 14-day period had passed. So yes, that pretty much summed up mine.
And now,
after vacation, I'm back at work. And we're now conducting telemedicine, either telephonic or televideo clinics. And I mean, it's only just now beginning to sort of quiet down, but it's like every other call was a patient who was calling, complaining of symptoms that were consistent with COVID-19, and invariably, you know, most of them tested positive, you know, but...
Okay.
Yes. So that was a little bit of a challenge, you know, caring at a distance. But, you know, God has really come through. Patients have survived. We have lost some, but the number of survivors have far exceeded the numbers who have passed, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you. One of the questions that I want to ask is, how was it like being just the patient's everything, kind of, because families couldn't come in, and to share your experience with those patients who were probably fearful, those who were dying, and, you know, their relatives could not come in. What did it do to you as their caregiver?
So with my experience, so I was in the SICU, so most of my patients were vented patients.
Is that
surgical ICU? Surgical ICU, but yeah. They turned it into a COVID unit because surgeries had stopped. So they had had stopped doing elective surgeries or any surgeries at all. And so that whole entire unit became COVID-19 patients. They were all COVID. And so they were all vented patients. So they couldn't actually have a conversation with you to say, you know, how they're feeling. I remember, though, one evening I went in and in the process of taking care of this gentleman, a Spanish-speaking gentleman, he was awake. He was on the vent, but he was alert. And he actually was making gestures pointing to his clothing in the chair. And I was trying to figure out what he was saying. So I actually got a notepad, and I held it in my hand. And I said, I don't understand what you're trying to tell me, but if you could write it, I would try to help you. And so he wrote the word son. S-O-N.
Oh, because he had the tube in his mouth.
He had the tubing, so he could not speak.
All right, yeah,
He was on the ventilator, right. And so what he was trying to tell me is that his phone was in his pants pocket, and he wanted to speak to his son. Long and short is I took the phone out. I actually held it in front of him because his hands could move, and he strolled the phone up, opened the phone, pressed the son number, and we actually put him on FaceTime, and he was able to see the sun and the smile that came over his face. It was just, it was something like I've never seen. He was just from ear to ear, the big smile. And his son is speaking to him in Spanish, and he's just lighting up. And I don't speak a lot of Spanish, but I know that he was. I said, every time the son says something, I said, see. And he's looking at his dad and he's smiling. And he's talking.
I hope one of the questions was.
It was so heartwarming. I was like, wow. I mean, like, that would give you enough desire to live. And wow. I just saw a different part of that guy that night. And I just said, Lord, look how good you are. Look how gracious you are. I said, that was enough to bring him for the next 10, 15, 20 years. He would never forget that. And
I hope one of the questions weren't, is he dying? See.
No. He was saying in Spanish, I remember some of the Spanish, he was saying that he loved him and that he misses him. And even though his father couldn't answer him, you know, I said, just keep talking. He hears you. And every time the father hear him say something, he put his thumb up. So he would put in like, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, see. But yeah, it was a good thing. Nice. Yeah. And he did survive. That patient did survive.
That's nice. Yes.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Yeah. How about you, Faith?
Yeah, I just remember this one man, but death was imminent. Like he was actively dying, and he had no family. And I went into his room one morning. He had so much fear on his face, and that just brought tears to my eyes. And I'm gonna tear up as I speak.
That's okay. So, that's life. Yeah. Life chat.
I held his hand, and his grip was really tight. And I told him, I know you can't speak right now, but I know you can say these words in your heart. And I led him to the Lord. And immediately, his hand just loosened, and he looked very comfortable. And I left work that day. He was still alive. But the next day I came in, they said he had died. But I just had joy in my heart knowing that I knew where he is right now. I knew, I knew that he's in the precious arms of Jesus. So that has been really sad, like just seeing them dying. But that I took it upon myself to just do the great commission that we were given, to just go and tell them about Jesus. So I've been going around and telling them, I don't care if they don't say it, if they don't say the believer's prayer with me, if they don't repeat, but I know deep in their hearts they hear and they acknowledge the prayer. And that's what I've been doing. And it's been bringing so much peace in my heart, and just seeing them just when they pass away, like with just peace in their faces. You see the peace in their face, and you know where their destination is. So we've been the family. We've been doing FaceTime with the ones who have survived, with their families. We've been their family, going in and just talking, and just it's sad that they can't see our smiles underneath all the PPE, all the masks and the shields. Yeah, but we just look at them and just make sure that eye contact, and just talk to them. Yeah.
Mm. Wow, excellent. Vivelyn, what do you thought about that story?
The story is just amazing. In seeing that, you know, you guys were the hand and feet of Jesus type of thing, that I guess I could say, because you were the only ones there with them. And that story that you just told Cheryl, that was so exciting. Even your face, you know, your face was lightened, and you can see here the joy through this whole thing, that he just got that phone call and that's all he needed. And with Faith, you know, talking about praying with people and holding their hands, those are things that, you know, might take one to Christ. Right. And that's something that's just great, that you guys were there as their friend. You guys were their family when they had no family. That is awesome. Yeah.
Right. That is amazing. That is amazing. Okay. So another question that I have for you guys is, how did your family feel knowing that you were going out, because COVID-19 put a lot of fear in individuals? How did they react? Like Cheryl, you were from a unit where it was nice and calm, and you were thrown headlong into the heat of the battle. And how did your family feel?
So I remember coming home and telling me, so let me go back up. So I was at work. I went to work on a Wednesday. I came home. I was probably home probably about an half an hour, and the supervisor called, nurse manager called, and said she wanted to talk to me. And I'm like, okay. She says, you're being deployed. So I wasn't warned. I was just told I was going to be deployed. And tomorrow morning, which would have been the Thursday morning, I was to present myself somewhere else where they would give us instruction. So the Thursday I went there, and then the Friday I was thrown into the 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. shift. So it went from 1 minute in the outpatient setting on Wednesday to Friday in a COVID unit. Wow. So I remember after I came home Thursday evening, I was talking to my daughter and my son, who had came home from school, because he's in college, but he had come home by this time. And so I said, so I'm going to be deployed, and that means I'm going to work with the COVID patient in the hospital versus in the clinic where I had regular oncology patients. And I said, you know, the whole thing is going very fast. And I'm just going to let you know, guys, know that starting tomorrow, which was Friday, I'll be working at nights. And I need my daughter to kind of keep an eye on my son. And when I was talking to them, I remember I kind of started to tear up, and my daughter looked at me and said, "Mom, it's going to be okay. You're going to be fine. You know, God is going to take care of you." And she was just reassuring me and just saying, you know, it's okay. You know, that's a career that you chose. This is what you choose to do. And, you know, you're going to be fine. You're going to go there and everything is going to be fine. And she went on for like a good 20 minutes about how prepared I am and how she know that I'll be able to do it. And my son is very reserved, so he don't really talk. But I remember after she finished saying all of that, and he looked at me and he says, "Ma, you could do this. You could do this. It's okay. You could do this." And I said, they had given me so much hope and strength and given me so much reassurance. And so enforced the idea that, you know what, I'm not alone, and they are with me. And I know that they were constantly saying, "Ma, it's okay." Every time I come home in the morning, and my daughter, who also worked in hospital as a secretary, on her floor was COVID floor. So she was reassuring me at the same time. I'm trying to say, are you okay? Or is everything all right? And she's like, yes, I put on my stuff. I wipe down my desk. So we just kind of bounce off of each other. And they were just very supportive. Very, very supportive. And as I said, we come off of our shift. My daughter works 3 to 11. She watches her, my son. My son is fine. He's here by himself. But he never expressed anything to say that, you know, it's always like, Ma, he comes in and wake me up at 5 o'clock. Ma, it's time to get up because shift starts at 7 o'clock. And I'll say, okay, Ryan, wake me up at 5 or 5:30. And he'll come and wake me up. Ma, it's time to get ready for work. So my family was fine with it. I mean, like I said, I'm a single parent with 2 kids, but my daughter and my son was very supportive of everything. Like I said, they were just reassuring me when I felt like I couldn't do anything. Like I was crying a couple of times and I came home like, these people are dying, Brianna. They are dying and there's no family member there. There's just us. And she's like, it's okay. It's okay, mommy. And you pray with them. And I'm like, yes. Every time I go in the room, I'll be rubbing their foot. I'll be praying. And I told her, I said, I've never seen anything like this in my entire life career. And I have graduated from regular nursing school in 1989. So you could do the math. I've never seen it. And it was growing so fast. Like, I mean, the people were just passing very fast. You didn't have time to recoup before somebody else was coding. But each time that we would be in the room and the patients, I remember constantly just praying over it, just praying over them. The noise is going, they're doing what they have to do, but I just keep praying, like, God, please just take care of them. I mean, a lot. I will say this, and I told somebody the other day, they didn't believe me. I worked from March till May 10th, and I knew this was God. There was only one of my patients that died, and it wasn't even my patient. It was the nurse that I was working with. She had the patient and she wanted me to help her with the patient because the patient was very critical and the aides and them had gone in there and they were taking care of him, wiping him, do the bed care. His temperature was very high. I think it was 104. And I remember her saying, Cheryl, could you help me with such a room 5 or whatever? And I said, yes. And after they finished, I said, what do you need me to do? And she said she wanted me to do some finger stick and something. So I went in there and did a finger stick and I came out and about an hour later, she went in there and heart rate had gone up. He had DSAT and everything and he died. And I said, that was the only patient that I actually went into the room that actually did not survive.
Wow.
For the whole time that was in there.
Wow, mm-hmm. Wow, wow.
And we had a lot of deaths. We had a lot of cold. And that was the only patient that died.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So how did your family feel, Faith?
Well, my husband also works in healthcare, so he was, but he's where he works, COVID was just limited to one area, so I could sense the fear in him that, but in a way he tried to not show it, but I could sense it, but he always checked in with me, and how are you feeling, are you okay, my daughters, my youngest was scared of me for the first week. she was like, I would get home and she would not see me until after some time. But then after some time, she started checking up on me. Mom, are you okay? How are your patients? And now they've been so supportive. They've been, and really, I think it was my attitude that really made them scared at first, because I would come home, keep my mask on, I would not take it off, and I would tell them to keep their distance, but after some time, I just relaxed, and I said, God is able to keep us all safe, he has kept us all safe this far, he's able to protect us, you know, like, if I'm doing all that I can, watching, I'm sanitizing, I'm disinfecting, I'm doing everything, I mean, I'm not gonna transmit anything to my kids, and if God has kept me this safe that I've worked in this COVID unit. I've exposed myself. Like, it's been some major exposure because I sit in with a patient. I go in and feed them, and I'm there for more than maybe 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But God has protected me, so I know he's going to protect my family too.
Wow, that was so awesome. This has been such an awesome show, but unfortunately, due to time, we have to end the segment. But wait, it's not over. we will pick up this discussion next week with these amazing nurses who are so compassionate and genuinely love their jobs and their patients. It really touched my heart and blessed me that these individuals are there rubbing their patients' feet and they're spending time with them. They're feeding them. They're being the family that they need at this time because, of course, with what's going on with COVID-19, the families cannot be there with them. And I'm just so happy to hear that there's nurses who cares that much and are going beyond their regular duties, and some of them even putting themselves at risk, according to what these ladies says. But let us keep them in our prayers, healthcare workers, nurses, doctors, in our prayers, and let us be mindful of each other and be good to each other, because that's what it's all about. Life, we're doing life together. Thank you for listening, and please join us next week as we continue this discussion. This is Life Chat with Viv and Vil. Goodbye.